I'm Melanie Tate, and this is Canberra Arts. And boy, isn't it winter in Canberra at the moment. It's the time when most of us are huddling under a doona in front of a fire. Not so if you're an artist in this city. There are still exhibitions opening, poetry being performed, musicians launching records, plays being put on. In fact, I dare any summer night to be as fun as the launch of the Fun Machine's new EP a couple of weeks ago. And of course, the music you're listening to now is from Chris Endre from the Fun Machine. This week, we're going to be escaping into a whimsical world with poet Alison McGregor. We'll be hearing from a story. We'll be hearing a story from Now Hear This, and some brand new music from Pete Ackhurst. First, though, we're going to pop by the Canberra Contemporary Art Space in Manuka for an artistic response to climate change in Dan Stuart Moore's exhibition "Metaphors for a Stuff Up." And Dan joins me now in the studio. Hello, Dan.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, Dan, when did you first know that climate change was going to be the subject of this exhibition?
Oh, good question. I guess my work has kind of dealt with climate change for a little while, probably since about 2007 or so. I guess it's a topic that really interests me, at the moment, it's kind of the context of my work, you know. So, for a while, I guess, is the answer to that.
What is it about climate change that has made you so passionate?
I tend to see climate change as much more an opportunity to do the right thing rather than, this terrifying thing that, you know, is going to engulf the world and, send us all into, a terrible future. But I actually see it as a catalyst to kind of get on top of things and start to, change things for the better. So, it's a reason. It's, something that can drive us to do the right thing.
So can you tell me how then you express this through your work as a sculptor?
Good question. I work with steel and automotive paint, so I make forms out of steel sheet that are kind of curved up, essentially I box things up into kind of forms, and that can be all kinds of forms. It could be a shell, it could be a wave, it could be a house, but they're all kind of subverted and messed with. And what I'm doing there is I'm kind of using a sense of duality to kind of express how I'm feeling. And what I'm doing is I'm actually observing the links between things. There's a couple of cloud works in this exhibition. And what I'm kind of looking at with these clouds is the forms themselves are a very simplified, almost cartoon-like cloud with truss-like elements coming out as rain. So a lot of people interpret it as rain and lightning at the same time. Mm-hmm. But what I'm actually sort of trying to say there is that, all the stuff that we're doing, all this building, all the sort of growth economy that we have is really lending itself to a greater input to the problem of climate change. And we kind of really need to rethink our basic way of doing things to try and address this. So I'm just making that link. I'm not suggesting how we do that or why we should do that. I'm just making the link because I don't have all the answers, but I do see things, and I think it's interesting to actually point them out rather than try and, say, well, this is what we should do.
Now, this sounds to me like quite cerebral art making, and probably that it's a fairly cerebral process. Where do you start in making an exhibition? So the exhibition is called Metaphors for a Stuff Up. So straight away, it's about more than just the visual by the sounds of things to me. Where do you start when you're putting this together?
That's a very good question. I'm not really sure. a friend of mine yesterday said, look, when I look at your work, it's a bit like when I look at a Gary Larson cartoon, the Far Side cartoon. It activates the same part of my brain, he said.
That's a great compliment.
Yeah, and it was a really nice compliment. It's nice to kind of get that, but where it kind of starts, I'm not really sure. But I know that I'm, you know, using that sense of duality, I kind of tend to sort of do a lot of drawings and, you know, sometimes things will sort of start to work together, kind of merge together, and they'll make sense as an object. And it's just a process of, collating enough of these things to actually sort of go, okay, well, all this stuff makes sense now, and I'll go and produce these things. The production itself is slightly different because there'll be happy accidents and things that just appear and you go, oh, wow, this is actually something that I didn't think of. And just the process of making really can change things sometimes and, you know, bring something very new. There are just opportunities in the making process that, you know, really kind of change things sometimes. But largely, I'm kind of sticking to what I'm doing. It's just occasionally you get that little, you know, spark and sort of, oh, a new direction. Oh, fantastic.
What are you hoping that the public are going to get from this exhibition? There's six pieces and it sounds to me like you have a fairly clear vision. What are you hoping that they're going to come away with?
Look, I think, you know, I've only been sitting in the gallery for a couple of days, really. But it's quite interesting, the reactions that I do get. A lot of people will just pop in and have a look around very, very quickly, literally stick their head in the door, not even put their feet inside the gallery, and go, and then disappear. So it's very hard to know what that actually means. But other times people will really come in and really sort of take their time. But I guess what I hope for is to kind of create discussion. And even on opening night, that started to happen. That was something really, really pleasing. Not that anyone else would have really kind of known about that, but I was like, oh, okay, this is great. Because, you know, like I said before, I'm not trying to, shove anything down anyone's throat. I'm just trying to point out some basic connections that I've found and that I've observed, should I say, and share them with people. That's what I'm trying to do. And because they're actually quite abstractive works, it takes some time, a good amount of viewing and a little bit of, you know, maybe reading the artist statement to really kind of get the feel of the show. I mean, they certainly all work together in the show. That, you know, it's quite a well-gelled show, which is quite interesting for me because it's actually my first solo show. I've done a lot of group shows and, you know, prizes like Sculpture by the Sea, but this is the first time by myself, which is quite a nice thing.
It's very exciting. The one interesting thing as well I saw with this exhibition, Dan Stuart Moore, was that you're really putting your money where your mouth is and donating part of the proceeds from your work. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. 20% of anything that I sell in this exhibition goes to Greening Australia. So the deal there, I guess, is that I'm trying to sort of offset my making process, even though, you know, my where I work has actually got a nice big solar panel on it, so mm-hmm. essentially, you know, what I'm doing is kind of paid for in a way in terms of, you know, embodied energy and all that kind of stuff, but my materials aren't, and there's nothing I can really do about that except maybe offset, you know, what I'm doing. So it's something that I've given a lot of thought to because, my materials aren't exactly green friendly at all. Mm-hmm. Steel is, pretty high in embodied energy and, you know, so what I mean by that is that it uses lots and lots of fuel to actually make the stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, besides, you know, the whole mining aspect as well. So, but it's a fantastic sculpting material. And so I'm kind of caught in this strange space, and this is the way I kind of deal with it.
It's really interesting. Dan Stuart Moore, thank you for coming in today. You can see Dan's exhibition, Metaphors for a Stuff-Up, at Canberra Contemporary Art Space in Manuka until July 3rd. Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you, Melanie.
This is Canberra Arts. It's no secret that Canberra is home to a boatload of really promising and hardworking musicians. Pete Akhurst is the latest to release his own EP titled Footprints. Pete came into the studio to talk about where the EP came from and what he hopes it will take him to. I started out by asking him about his music.
My music is a mixture between a lot of things. I don't like to stick to one particular thing because I find it too boring. So I like to grab little bits of everything from folk, rock, I guess you could say singer-songwriter, but I really don't like that term, personally. Mm-hmm. But it's an eclectic mix of music, basically. But I've done it in my own special solo type of way. So as it says on the poster, a friend of mine very boldly said, add one part of Ash Grunwald, one part of Jack Johnson, and I think one part of John Butler, and you have a Pete Akhurst. So if you take that away with you and then figure it out, I guess.
Sweet. And how does that sit with you? Are they the kind of artists that you listen to
yourself? I look up to all of them. They're all fantastic artists. So that's fine with me until I guess, kind of build my musical knowledge, well, my musical self a bit more to be able to say exactly what I sound like. But for the meantime, I'm happy with that little quote.
So what kind of music is on your personal music player? Like, who are you listening
to today? My personal music, actually,
today
on the way over here, I was listening to a guy who I listen to without fail nearly every single day called The Tallest Man on Earth. He's a solo guy from Sweden. He's very Bob Dylan-esque, like his voice is very Bob Dylan, but he plays in completely open tunings.
Right. What do you mean by open tunings?
He plays in where the normal guitar, a normal six-string guitar would be tuned in what they call E. Mm-hmm. So open tuning basically just allows the guitar player to basically play a full chord with only one finger.
Right.
So it's very cool. And I've been delving into open tunings a little bit as well. And it's lots of fun.
What brought you to Canberra?
My parents. Mm-hmm. And it was the right time to leave Sydney because I was just about to do the HSC.
Oh, perfect.
And I found out that Canberra doesn't have to do that. So I was like, sweet, I want to be a musician anyway. So I moved to Canberra and about 6 or so years ago, I moved here and did year 10, mm-hmm. and it was just my parents.
And what do you make of the Canberra music scene? How do you
I love it. From growing up and not really being allowed to be in some of the pubs and stuff that I was when I was in Sydney, but my sister took me under her wing and took me in, and not really knowing much, just kind of growing up around all these smoky, bearded, beer-drinking type of lads, and then thinking, oh, this is really cool. I like this. And then moving to Canberra and being able to, having the lovely Joan at the Potbelly to let me play there on the open mic nights and being my guardian because I wasn't even able to be in there yet, and play, and then just have it grown from then until now. It's just amazing. And the lovely people that I've met as well. You've got your Carl Bird Charlie and your CMC that are just put on these amazing events and are just out to help everybody. And the scene's just, everybody's out to help everybody, and it's awesome.
And do you have favourite bands around town? Are there musicians that you really get into their music to?
There are a few. Ellis Collective would have to be my top number one. I remember when I first was playing, I did a gig with Matty Ellis, and just as soon as he started singing, I was like, that's how I want to sing. Mm-hmm. And so he's always been a massive influence to me. But and then there's Beth and Ben and Dub Dub Goose, who I enjoy, and then you've got the newer guys that have been around, like the Raw City Ruckus, who are the hip-hop band that have been doing their thing, and the Opus Rochambeau. There's a plethora of bands that I love that are in Canberra.
So tell me about you launched this album last week at the Front,
yep.
And it was quite a surprise to you.
It was a surprise. I'm the biggest pessimist when it comes to my stuff. My girlfriend is always like, you're good, just, if you build it, it will come. And it was the same type of thing. I was talking to Maddie about it as well from the Alice Collective. I was like, dude, I don't think anybody's going to come. He's like, it's all right. You've put all the motions in place. Just let everybody else just do their thing. And I worked it out to be able to kind of make my money back on all the promotion and stuff that I spent. I was like, all right, I need about 50 people to be able to to make it a decent night. And I ended up got to about 8:30, and then I think I looked at the little counter that we had for all the people coming in. It was about 62. I was like, all right, cool. I'm happy. This is cool. And then I got on stage and kind of looked out, and I was like, there's a lot more people than 62 here. And I finished playing my set and went up and had a look at the counter. I noticed there was 132, I think, at the time on the counter. And I mean, people were out. If anybody's listening to this podcast, thank you for standing out in the cold, because it was cold on Friday night.
Yeah.
But they had the gas heaters, but they were all rugged up, and the front being the lovely little place that it is, giving everybody blankets outside. And it was just phenomenal. It was crazy. I've never thought in my wildest dreams that anything like that would happen off my first release. So it was a big shock.
So with Wildest Dreams, we have a moment now to be able to put it on record. What are your wildest dreams? What are you aiming for, Pete?
I'm just aiming to be able to do this full time and get paid for it. I'm not aiming to be anything big. It would be great if that would happen, but I never dreamed to do it. I just dreamed to be able to play my music for the people and they enjoy it. If I play to a room of 10 people and they're all listening and I sell 3 CDs, great. I take that as a good night, and that's what I do it for.
And what are your plans for the near future with this EP?
Take it everywhere.
Yeah.
Go and get in the car and just go. And go everywhere in Australia that I can. And then once I've exhausted Australia, I'm planning to go over to America and Canada and do the same thing again.
Fantastic.
As much as I can. With no to little no plans, just go over there and figure it out when I get there.
Great. Sounds great. Pete Akhurst is chatting with me now in the studio. We're going to hear a song from your EP. Which song?
I think we should play Sister.
Great. And can you set it up for us?
Yeah, Sister was written about, I've got 3 older sisters, and I'm the youngest of all 3 of them. And being older siblings, they taught me and showed me what music really was when I was growing up. I've had my old man playing Simon and Garfunkel records and all that type of stuff when I was growing up, but my sisters really kind of showed me the way into all these different types of music. So it was from then that I kind of got with Nirvana and Kurt Cobain and saw that, and I was like, yeah, I really want to play music. So it was kind of a saying a thank you to showing me all this cool music when I was younger and kind of setting me along my path to be a musician. So I thought, what better way to say thank you than to write them a song?
How did they react when they first heard it?
I think most of them were all overseas. So I got emails. I think I've still got those emails now. But they were all pretty chuffed. Yeah. They were all pretty happy with it.
What can I say? To the people I love, what can I tell them about the scared times, about the times we've shared? Can I call on them? Sister, I love you. Sister, I do. I can't live without you. Please come on. We've had so much fun. So much fun. You told me to be the man I am. You told me to be the man. And for that, I thank you. Sister, I love you. wonder I do. I can't live without you. Sister, please come home. You never know how much you mean to me. I love you all. I love you, sister, I do.
Peter Kirst with his song Sister from his new EP Footprints. You're listening to Canberra Arts. I'm Melanie Tate. And coming up, we're going to be having a story from our very first Now Hear This night. And if you'd like to find out how you can hear audio from the most recent Now Hear This, you'll have to stay tuned. My next guest, chances are, you'll know if you've ever been to the theatre in Canberra. Alison McGregor is a prolific actor in this city, and she's also an accomplished poet. Here she is with an untitled poem.
Where do they sleep, the tiny ones? Those people who put the things around the place, like the one who put the glass of wine there on the step, or the person who moved the tree branch from the path. They could just be humans, but I wouldn't know since I've never seen them. They could be the others, the little ones. If I think closely, I can see their gnarled hands all brown and stringy like a coconut. I can see their eyes flash green or yellow or hazel or deep inky black. I can hear their voices, old as the wind, but not as secretive nor as wise. I think they see the world and the people on their paths, and then they change things. Of course, I can't be sure. I've never seen them. But if I think closely, I can watch them as they hobble slowly on their thick, arthritic legs, their dappled fibrous cloaks trailing behind them and collecting sticks and leaves as they go. They converge on a point, and with their backs hunched and their faces filled with glee, they change things. They remove obstacles or leave little gifts. Or maybe they don't. I've never seen them. But if I think closely enough, I'm witness to them as they open a voluminous bag and pull out a full glass of wine. And I wonder how it hasn't spilled. Or as they grasp a tree branch and put it in the bag for later, and I wonder how it could possibly fit. I can say a silent thanks and farewell as they wander away, each on their own path, dissipating from the scene of their secret endeavours. If I think really closely, I can watch as we come towards the place our path is taking us, and delight as we find the gifts that offer joy and ease to our hearts. And just faintly, I can see the crooked teeth of the little one who watches, just to be sure, and smiles at a job well done. Of course, I can't tell you all this is true, I've never seen them, but if I think closely enough, the little ones are everywhere, guiding us and guiding us. But no matter how hard I think, I can never ever see, so I'm never ever sure where they sleep, those little ones.
Poet and actor Alison McGregor there with that poem. You're listening to Canberra Arts. I'm Melanie Tate. We had our second Now Hear This storytelling night at the Street Theatre. Now, if you'd like to hear stories from the night, you need to tune in every Tuesday at 2:15 p.m. to Afternoons with Genevieve Jacobs. For now, though, I have one of the first Now Hear This stories for you, Jenny Blake's very funny and very touching story of her Canberra boob job.
We have to go back way, way back in the day when I was only 21 and I was very naive. I had two children. I was married. Naive. Anyway, at the time, my husband was wanting to convince me that it was a good idea that he go to London for 3 months without me and the two small babies. I wasn't really convinced that that was a great idea, so he was throwing me ideas about, you know, well, what about this? What about that? And then he mentioned, Well, how about we shout you a boob job? Being young and naive, I went, I think I've got it. Because, you know, when you have children and you breastfeed, the boobs go out here, they come back, and then they... And at 21, I was pretty self-conscious about my breasts. So I thought, right, before he makes his mind up, I'm getting the yellow pages out, I'm finding this doctor, and I'm booking myself in for a boob job. Now, I was living in Kayleen. I wanted to go somewhere handy. I wanted somewhere where I could go with the children. I didn't want to go to Sydney or, you know, Bali to get a boob job. So I found one plastic surgeon in Canberra, and he was the only plastic surgeon in Canberra, and I didn't care. So I went. I made the appointment, and I got into the surgery, and I said, sad bosoms, me want perky. He looked at me, and he's sort of frowning, and he said, I don't actually do cosmetic plastic surgeon. I work on burns victims and car accident victims. I felt about this big. But I was convinced that this was going to happen. So I said, but there's a sign on your door saying plastic surgeon. Surely you can do a simple oomph. And I said a few other things and cried. And surely he was convinced. He said, okay, all right, now you're sure about this, you're sure about this, and, you know... More tears, and I said, yes, I'm sure, I'm sure. I'm only 21, and look at these. Anyway, booked me into hospital. Off I went. I was very excited. I came out of surgery, and I was just coming out of consciousness, and I felt this enormous weight on my chest, you know. And I opened one eye, and there was mountains on my chest. And I was wrapped up like a mummy, and I was trying to tear the wrapping off to see what was underneath there. And yes, there was breasts there, silicon implants and breasts. And I press the buzzer. I'm having a bit of a hyperventilation here, and I'm going, you know, I said, Perky, not Dolly Parton. And the nurse was going, it's all right, darling, calm down. Look, it's swelling. There's a lot of swelling there. We've had to push and shove and get those silicon implants in there. There's lots of swelling. It'll calm down. I calmed down. And besides, I had a look at the cleavage and it wasn't too bad, so I was going, I think I can live with this. So the doctor came and he said, yes, 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 it's all, you know, not all swelling, but it'll swell down, it'll calm down. Well, I had to go out and buy new bras and, you know, all that thing, new clothes, nothing would fit me. They were sort of quite big, and I was getting used to it, you know, sort of walking a little bit differently and... The clothes, you know, trying on every set of clothes I had that didn't fit and throwing them out and getting new ones. I had to go back to work. And I was working at the old Canberra Inn down in New Lynham, and I was doing a bit of bar work, and I went back to work. And I'm walking back and forth, and there's this old guy, you know, barfly, you know the type, turns up at 10 o'clock, doesn't leave till 4, and he's very observant. And he goes, darling, where have you been? We haven't seen you for a week. And I said, well, I was unwell and I had the mumps. And he looked at me and he said, well, pet, the mumps have done wonders for you. I kept very busy. Anyway, the word was out. Cousins, friends, you know, they were ringing me saying, I've heard, you've got the boob job, you've got the boob job. And I went, yeah, I've got the boob job. And send me, come over, let me have a look, all that sort of thing. Anyway, I got a phone call from a girl in Port Macquarie. She said, I've heard about these boobs. You must send a photo. I was very obliging. I took the camera. I got a photo. And the same day, I got a phone call from my mother. I'm not sure whether I want to tell her until the swelling goes down. Maybe she won't notice. But I wasn't going to tell her. Anyway, she had some rather sad news. My 80-something great-uncle was in hospital dying. And she asked me if I could send him a card. I'm thinking of you. And I thought, how selfish of me. You know, I'm going on about my boobs and my poor uncle is dying. Anyway, he had a good life and he was well into his 80s. But I was sad and I wanted to write him a letter. So I went to the post office and I had the two children at my feet, you know, herding like cats. Stay here, stay there, don't run out on the road. And I've written a card to my uncle. I'm thinking of you. I've written a card to my girlfriend, slipped in the photo. And yes, you can guess. My dying uncle got the photo of my breasts. That's how my mother found out, and she wasn't impressed. But I have on good faith And through the grapevine that, you know, the nurse told my cousin, who told my sister, who told me at the funeral, that he died with a smile on his face. I wanted to get back into real life, play my sport. I was really big on basketball and football and going to the gym. I mean, I don't keep still for very long. And I went back to touch football, and I was playing touch football at Gira Lane Sporting Field, and I was playing against the Woden Creek girls, and they were big and scary, and that was just the junior team. So I thought, well, I'll put the good bra on and I'll get out there. And it was causing a little bit of difficulty. They did get in the road. Halfway through the first half, I get this huge big knock. Very, very painful. I went home. I went to bed. And I thought, it'll be right. It'll be all right in the morning. It'll be fine. So I wake up the next morning. I look under my arm. And there's a silicone implant protruding under my arm. It's just sort of sneaking out where it shouldn't be. Yeah, I said that too. Oh, this is not working. Back to the surgeons. That was the last straw. I said, look, I can't live with these. I've made a really stupid mistake. I've learnt the hard way. Please, just take them out. So off I went to hospital again, feeling, you know, quite silly and embarrassed. But while I was there, I had them out. I came back out, wanted to get out of there as quick as I could. And there was a plastic bag beside me with these two silicone implants with a big sign, Jenny's boobs. They had a sense of humour. But one sister came up and she said, I want to talk to you about something serious. Those silicone implants. I said, yeah, you can have them. And she said, I'm serious. I want them. And I went, whoa, don't go there. They're too big. They're too uncomfortable. And, you know, it's all right. And she said, no, we have some women in the surgery, in the ward here. There's one who's going into surgery this afternoon. And she's having a mastectomy. And I thought, oh, dear God. She went into surgery. They used my silicone implant to replace her breast tissue. So she came out of surgery with no deformity. And that made me feel very good. And then she said, we've got another woman coming in next week who could use that other silicone implant. So I learnt the hard way, but I was pleased because, you know, there's nothing wrong with a push-up bra.
That's the wonderful Jenny Blake with her story, The Canberra Boob Job from Now Hear This. If you'd like to hear the most recent stories from Now Hear This, you'll need to tune in to Afternoons with Genevieve Jacobs every Tuesday at 2:15. At 2:15 every Tuesday, Genevieve Jacobs will play one of the most recent stories from Now Hear This. That's all we have time for this week. A few things, though, that are happening over the next fortnight. On Thursday, the 30th of June, at the National Portrait Gallery, there'll be a forum put on by the Australia Council on marketing your arts organisation or company through the web. So if you'd like to be part of that, it's at 3:30, Thursday, June 30th, Portrait Gallery. You can find more information at the Australia Council's website. And don't forget to check out regarding.com.au, new work by Canberra artists. Have a great week.